It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
From the Fox News Radio studios in New York City, giving you opinions and facts with a positive approach. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, hi, everybody. Hope you had a great week. Thanks so much for listening all week long, because I know you did. We have Jonathan Turley standing by to make sense of what's going on with the Supreme Court decision and the harassment that's taking place. Dan Hoffman will unwind some of the intelligence that's coming out of Russia. Vladimir Putin, May 9th. He was also a CIA station chief over in Moscow. Dan Hoffman at the bottom of the hour. And keep in mind, too, there's some reports about our role in the war in Ukraine that I love that we're doing it. I don't love that everyone knows about it. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Critical race theory has become one of those hot button issues that the Republicans and other, you know, disinformers have seized on. It's, you know, weaponizing people's emotion.
That is Nino Jankowicz. Disband the disinformation board and your bizarre czar. 20 states are demanding it. It's a partisan attack bureau and Republicans are the target.
Number two.
U.S. intelligence shared with Ukraine helped lead to Ukraine's sinking of the Russian cruiser Moskva, one of the most embarrassing setbacks Russia has faced since the start of the war. The news coming on the heels of a New York Times report that says the U.S. has given Ukraine real-time battlefield intelligence that American officials said led to the killings of Russian generals.
Unbelievable. What are you telling them? Why are you telling them? Looks like the U.S. provided intel to take out Russia's number one warship, played a role in killing at least 12 Russian generals. Personally, I love it. But why are we talking about it? This is Vladimir Putin is getting desperate to show some games for their gain for their May 9th victory day. We'll bring you the latest from the battlefield.
Number one.
Do you think the progressive activists that are now planning protests outside some of the justices' houses are extreme?
Peaceful protest? No. Peaceful protest is not extreme.
Peaceful protest at people's houses is the key, outgoing press secretary. Supreme decision on Roe might be a month away, but protests and some violence is starting already as they fence in the Supreme Court. No kidding. And the homes of the justices are now targeted. How do we know? Their homes were on a map that was circulated with a group that's going to be protesting outside their house. Targeting, intimidation is no big deal to the White House. It is to me. Especially, I think that Justice Kavanaugh's got a younger family. Can you imagine that? You want to go to 12, you're in 12th grade, you're in 7th grade or 3rd grade, and you look outside, and people are saying horrible things about your dad. They are screaming maybe at you as you get ready to get on the bus. Unbelievable. Jonathan Turley, how did it get to this?
I don't know. You know, what is shocking is that the White House could not muster the courage to even draw the line at harassing justices and their families in their homes. So Justice Barrett also has younger children. And we've gotten to that point in politics where you can't even condemn what is really grossly inappropriate types of tactics. And what's fascinating, obviously, is that this is entirely gratuitous. This is an addiction to rage. They're not going to change the position of these justices. They want to mete out punishment. And the White House has nothing to say about condemning that, discouraging it, because they've yielded to the mob on issues like this.
And listen, I feel the same way if some pro-life group is rallying outside somebody who's pro-choice. I say, what are you doing? Not their house. Keep the home out of this. So Jen Psaki,
I think most Americans.
I would think so.
Most Americans do.
Yeah, okay, peaceful protest. You have a right to protest, but I don't know. Do I want to get up every day and protest at somebody's house and harass them in some suburb somewhere or some apartment building in a metropolitan area? Jen Psaki was asked that question. Cut two.
Some of these protesters have young kids, but their neighbors are not all public figures. So would the president think about waving off activists that want to go into residential neighborhoods in Virginia and Maryland?
Peter, look, I think our view here is that peaceful protest, there's a long history in the United States and the country of that. And we certainly encourage people to keep it peaceful and not resort to any level of violence.
So Senator John Cornyn put this out. He says attempts to intimidate Supreme Court justice by the radical left are sadly nothing new, but dangerous nonetheless. We must protest the we must protect the justices and their families in their cases. So he's going to look to bolster up their private security because of a decision that hasn't even been yielded yet.
That's right. And the decision could ultimately change. But this is, of course, a continuation of what has been going, becoming this rising level of rage in our society. And it's also part of the fact that our own leaders have been denigrating the institution of the Supreme Court for years. You had Majority Leader Chuck Schumer standing in front of the Supreme Court, actually threatening justices by name. You have other senators demanding that the court be packed. Even when someone leaked an opinion of the Supreme Court, one of the most exceedingly unethical acts in my lifetime that I've seen, the White House didn't even condemn that. You know, they were asked to condemn the leak, and they really didn't have much to say about that. They instead wanted to talk about
right.
how bad the opinion was.
And accuses people like Jonathan Turley for being upset about the leak of distraction. So that's unbelievable. I'm surprised it's been a week and we have not found out who it is. But there's two other angles I want to bring up with you, one of which is they are now saying that during the confirmation process, Amy Coney Barrett and Justice Kavanaugh committed fraud. Listen to Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, cut 7.
It's a lie, and we've never had fraudulent testimony in the Supreme Court before. This is unprecedented to have justices commit fraud during hearings. So if you want to talk about process, I would focus on that process.
So did they commit fraud during the hearings?
No, I wrote a column on this. It's utterly nonsense. What they're referring to is when these justices were asked point blank about Roe v. Wade, they all responded in virtually identical ways, this rote response that, by the way, is also pretty much the same that Democratic nominees have responded. Because of a thing called the Ginsburg rule, they insist that they will give no hints nor forecasts of how they would vote. So all of the justices simply say Roe is established precedent, and established precedent has a presumption of validity under a doctrine called stare decisis. They all have said that. That doesn't mean they're not going to reverse it. It doesn't mean that they're not going to change their mind even on things they've already decided. To put this into perspective, Plessy v. Ferguson was established precedent for 58 years. So the same thing could have been said about Plessy. It was precedent. It was protected by stare decisis, but that didn't mean it couldn't be overturned.
Understood. The other thought is let's codify Roe v. Wade and let's put it on a vote. Next Wednesday, the Senate's going to vote on it. It's been clear. Collins and Murkowski both said, yeah, I'm not going to look to do that. In layman's terms, what could they do? They could take a law that's about to be overturned they take the Roe v. Wade and they would make it law. So therefore, it would be impervious to the judge's rule.
Yeah, I have real questions about this. First of all, it doesn't look like they do have the votes. They certainly don't seem to have the votes to overcome a filibuster. But even if they were to codify Roe, it would be immediately challenged because the opinion basically says this is an issue that belongs to the states. And the challengers would likely say, look, you can't do this. You can't legislate something that doesn't naturally belong to you. Now, it would be a close question. I think that the Congress could argue that this is interstate commerce under existing case law, but it would have a serious challenge as to whether Congress is coercing states. It depends on how they want to carry this out. You know, there's a concern over a thing called commandeering. There's a lot of potential challenges here.
So Hillary Clinton says, look out, this is just the first step. Cut 3.
This opinion is dark. It is incredible. incredibly dangerous, and it is not just about a woman's right to choose. It is about much more than that. And I hope people now are fully aware of what we're up against, because the only answer is at the ballot box to elect people who will stand up for every American's rights. And any American who says, look, I'm not a woman, this doesn't affect me, I'm not black, that doesn't affect me, I'm not gay, that doesn't affect me. Once you allow this kind of extreme power to take hold, you have no idea who they will come for next.
So what are your thoughts on that? This is dark?
Well, first of all, as someone from the free speech community, it's always wonderful to hear Hillary Clinton talk about how you can't yield on rights after she just spent the last week calling for censorship and calling for European countries to force Musk to censor on Twitter. So she's rather selective on what constitutional values she wants to support. But the problem with the Democratic members is that they're playing out this parade of horribles. And I think it's undermining their argument. A good example of that is President Biden, who said that, you know, what's next could be that our children are segregated according to their presumed gender identity. And that's, of course, ridiculous. There's nothing in the opinion that would support that. Roe was not the case law that prevented that. Also, the opinion itself says that the decision does not go any further than abortion. But by creating this parade of horribles, I think that they're undermining their argument. I think people will begin to tune it out. It's sort of like that warning at the end of pharmaceutical commercials when right. You have that voice that says, may cause monsterism. Nobody hears it anymore.
I hear you, but you got to put it in there so you don't get sued by people like Jonathan Turley. So Merrick Garland weighed in, too. He's outraged, says leading the Department of Justice, cut four.
The Justice Department has steadfastly been committed to defending the right to abortion. We are amicus in the Dobbs case. The Solicitor General herself argued on behalf of the United States in the Dobbs case. If the law changes, we will address appropriate next steps at that time. But what will not change is our commitment to defending the rights of women and all Americans.
So what's he going to do?
Yeah. Well, you notice he didn't say what he was going to do, because there's not a lot you can do if this is not a federal issue. The fact is that the federal government can try to fund abortions in red states, or at least travel to states that allow for abortion. They can probably do that. But Congress, of course, can step in. There are some issues there as to whether you can use federal funds for those purposes. But otherwise, this fight is going to move to the states. And what's really interesting is have all of these Democrats say that this is an attack on democracy. A New York Times article said this is autocracy. Well, look, there's lots of people with good faith objections to this draft opinion. But to say that it's an attack on democracy by returning the issue to democratic process is rather odd. I mean, that if the Democrats are right and there's overwhelming support for abortion, there will be little change because the states will simply protect this right. I think what they understand is that that's not the case, that abortion still divides this country. The needle has not moved significantly, particularly in terms of limits, as opposed to an outright ban. Polls indicate that there's a very strong majority of Americans that agree with the Mississippi law, agree with drawing a line around the 15th week. And I think that they anticipate that if this is left to the democratic process, that may be the resting point for some of these states.
20 Republican-led states are threatening legal action against the DHS and urge the disbanding of the Un-American Disinformation Board, which we just found out about clumsily last week. Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Texas, Utah, and West Virginia. They want to just say forget about it, and a lot has to do with the person in charge. This is supposed to be a nonpartisan position. This woman sounds like Rachel Maddow, Nina Jankowicz. What do you think about this disinformation board?
Well, you know, the fact is we don't need a disinformation governance board. Agencies already have offices that put out corrective releases when they see something that they deem to be false. What they have here is a board that is headed by someone who is a major advocate for censorship. I mean, she has spent her life arguing for corporate and public censorship, and she is extremely partisan. She took the position that the Hunter Biden laptop was disinformation. She calls Republicans as basically disinformers. What was really interesting in the most recent clip, what's really interesting about the most recent clip is she said, you know, if you read something and you find yourself getting really upset, it's because you're being manipulated by disinformation. And I was like, really? So basically anything that makes Nina Jankowicz upset
right.
is because someone's a disinformer?
Well, for example, I'll give you an example. She's 100% right, Jonathan, because I know a lot of Philly fans that watch the Mets score 7 runs in the 9th inning, and they're reading the recap of the game right now because they went to bed thinking the Phillies were going to win. So that clearly must be disinformation. I mean, this is the least qualified person to be in charge.
Well, it's the thing is, what's real, if you really want to look at disinformation, you look at how Mayorkas has defended the disinformation board. I mean, I can't even keep track of the verbal gymnastics that he's employed here. He says, well, you know, she's really there to fight against disinformation by the cartels. Really? So what is she going to do against the Medellin cartel? Sing a Broadway tune? I mean, are they going to go, oh, my God, the Disinformation Governance Board is saying that we're lying.
Jonathan, I have to leave it there. Thanks so much. Great outline. Way to put it in perspective. I'm so glad I retained you at the beginning of the year. Back in a moment.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
In this day and age, in particular, Laura, there is never a good, legitimate reason to go and protest at the home of a public official. This is a place where they sleep. This is a place where, if they've got children at home, where they're raising children. It's an implicit threat of physical violence, and that has no place in our system of government, certainly no place in our judicial system. And yet, that's what they're wanting to do.
And by the way, the Democrats are for that. They call for that. I'm going to play a montage of you for you. When we come back, it's going to be Dan Hoffman. I'm going to talk about what's happening with Russia and Ukraine. Some fascinating things are taking place. I need his perspective as a CIA guy. But I'll play some cuts of Democrats really urging for their followers to do this. And they're organizing now to go through all Supreme Court justices who they assume are going to vote to overturn Roe v. Wade and stand outside their houses. My hope is, everyone's dug in on their sides, but the so-called moderates or undecided independents will be outraged by this because they see them doing their job, looking at it as a decision. You should not be giving up your privacy or exposing your family because of your job. Because of your job. I mean, it's not criminal activity, but it's totally unsavory and, for me, unacceptable. What do you think? 1-866-408-7669. Remember, we're putting it together now. One Nation comes to you, Fox News Channel, 8 o'clock Saturday.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We do not provide intelligence on the location of senior military leaders on the battlefield or participate in the targeting decisions of the Ukrainian military. The Ukrainians have, quite frankly, a lot more information than we do. This is their country, their territory, and they have capable intelligence collection abilities of their own.
That is Admiral Kirby on the report that we are providing intelligence that allowed the Ukrainians to take out at least 12 generals and that their lead warship. I love that we're doing it. I don't love that the world knows about it. Daniel Hoffman, former CIA station chief, served in Moscow, Iraq, Pakistan, South Asia. Only the hard stuff. Dan, welcome back. What is your take on this new intelligence that's come out on those two things?
Yeah, so I think certainly it's not the United States policy to share intelligence that would result in a lethal attack on Russian generals. But it's to Russia probably a distinction without a difference, because what we're doing is we're giving the Ukrainians intelligence on where the Russian command posts are. We're giving them intelligence on where Russian naval vessels are, like the Moskva. And Ukraine is going to marry that up with their own intelligence collection. The Russians are speaking often openly without any encryption. And so Ukraine is able to discern where the key people are and launch strikes accordingly. The question that is worth asking is, would they have been able to launch the strikes without our intelligence? And maybe the answer to that is a no, in which case, you know, we played a key role. But, you know, this administration has been very nervous about not wanting to provoke Vladimir Putin. They're certainly running the risk of doing it, but I'm with you. Ukraine is trying to defend themselves, and by international law, they have a right to do it, and we should be helping them.
Right. A couple of things, Dan. We are becoming more and more aggressive. In the beginning, we were so cautious, and we're becoming more and more bold. Why do you think that is? And do you agree with my assessment?
I agree with you 100%. This administration has lagged behind, going back 13 months ago when Russia put 70,000 troops on the border and they got a summit between Vladimir Putin and President Biden. That's when we should have been giving Ukraine javelins and stingers and helicopters and howitzers and all sorts of drones and things to deter Russia. The concern from the administration is that we would provoke Russia. But I honestly believe that a couple of things have changed the calculus for this administration. One is just the devastation Russia has caused, the civilian casualties, bombing maternity wards, destroying cities. That has been covered by our intrepid journalists, including Benji Hall and our Fox News colleagues who were killed on the front lines, and others as well from other networks. That's, I think, gone a long way to influencing this administration in a positive way. There's a bipartisan consensus with Republicans and Democrats agreeing that we should do this. And then you've got President Zelensky, who's been so eloquent, and it's he, really, who has mobilized NATO members, especially the United States, to stand up right for democracy, freedom, and liberty, what matters.
John Kirby went on to talk about what we're doing now. Tell me the significance of this. Cut 16.
Does DOD assess Ukraine will be ready to use all 90 of the M-77 howitzers the U.S. has provided?
I think only the Ukrainians can answer that, Tony. I mean, these howitzers belong to them once they get inside the country. And I can tell you, as of this morning, more than 80 of them are actually in Ukraine of the 90. It's almost complete. And we do know that, and you heard Secretary Austin say this the other day in testimony, that we know some of them are being used in combat because they've told us.
So, in the past they've said, well, you know, we get them to Poland, we get them there, and it's up to them to pick them up and get them through. Somehow the intelligence is getting through. Is it your understanding that the stuff is getting through?
It is, but we're in a race, you know, right now to get what Ukraine needs to the front lines before Russia overtakes Ukraine with superior troop numbers. And Russia knows that. That's why they've been bombing the rail hubs and trying to destroy Ukraine's infrastructure. I don't think, you know, Russia didn't do that in the initial stages of the war because I think Russia expected to topple the government in Kyiv and wanted to retain the infrastructure rather than destroy it. But now they're seeing that we're able to get so much equipment into Ukraine through those rail lines, and that's influencing Russia's military calculus as far as, you know, areas they want to target. But, you know, we're getting lots of material in, and we're not being very open about, you know, how we're doing it and how much is making its way in any more than we have to. But again, I think we're in a race right now against time. And those, you know, where the fighting is going to take place now, I mean, it looks a lot like Kansas. It is flat, open terrain, and it's going to be vicious warfare along the lines that we saw in the Second World War.
So very interesting, because I was reading Pentagon officials, unnamed, said that they're baffled that the Russians are moving in such a tepid way, a slow way. They thought the invasion would be quicker, more deliberate in the east, and then work their way to the south. Why would they be moving so slow? Is it out of necessity because their armaments, because their conscripts are just not experienced? What do you think that is?
Well, they're depleted. The forces are significantly depleted. It's a debate about how much of Russia's military is now just inoperable. Ukraine inflicted massive casualties on Russia and destroyed significant amounts of their military equipment. And yes, they've lost a dozen generals, which hurts their command and control. The failure, Russia's failure in the first phase of the war to induce Zelensky to leave. Remember, we offered him an aircraft. We said, here's your aircraft to leave your country. And Zelensky said, no, thanks. I need ammunition. The fight's here. Forget the ride. That was incredible, you know, turning point for Ukraine. And we actually weren't helping him out at that time like we should have been, encouraging him to do the wrong thing. But, you know, then Ukraine fought back and prevented Russia from taking Kyiv. Ukraine is fighting back in the area around Kharkiv and has caused so much damage and so many casualties to Russia that Russia doesn't have the forces they would have had previously to target launch their attacks in the east and in the south. And so, you know, you're looking at a protracted stalemate war of attrition there. Right. Where Ukraine, because of the military assistance we're providing and their bravery, they'll be able to stand up to fight. But make no mistake, the Ukrainians are under siege. And, you know, this is going to be a tough fight for them. The Russians still have troops they can throw at this fight. But I still wonder, Brian, like, at what point does the Russian military say, you know what, the KGB guy in the Kremlin just isn't serving our nation very well here. Our economy is cratering. We've got no relationship with the West whatsoever. Russia has one pipeline to China. They don't have the capacity to export their hydrocarbons to China to the extent that they did to Europe. They're going to lose eventually on that. And this is a bad war for Russia. It might be a war of necessity for Putin himself. It's a bad war for Russia, and every day that goes by is demonstrating that.
So there's two cities that they want to claim, Mariupol and Kherson, yep. And they're already saying, oh, only accepting rubles, I'm the new mayor. That's it. We're Russia. We're setting up supermarkets and get used to it. Are they going to say we took these two cities who've expanded and secured the Donbass region? Is that what they're going to say May 9th at Victory Day? Am I overstating what Victory Day is to Russia?
Well, you could be sure Vladimir Putin will overstate it. You know, I think he was hoping to celebrate Victory Day in Kyiv, but that's not going to happen. Or to have his puppet regime in Kyiv celebrate Victory Day. What you just said is about the most that the Russians, that Vladimir Putin can claim. But I think that their longer term aim is certainly to hit Odessa and link up all the way to the Transnistria and deny Ukraine any access whatsoever to the Black Sea, which means you've cut Ukraine off from their economic lifeline and questionable viability economically going forward. That's what Vladimir Putin wants to do. And Ukraine will fight back to ensure that that doesn't happen. And that's really what the fight is for Odessa. It's for what's left of Mariupol, and it's for Odessa going forward.
But right now, Odessa gets hit, goes rocketed, but it's not being invaded. So do you think that is a hope but not a likelihood that they take Odessa and make them landlocked?
I think that's the Russian strategy. Whether they succeed or not will depend in part on the additional military assistance we're able to provide Ukraine and whether Ukraine can stay in the fight. You know, this is taxing their own, you know, resources, military. And the question is, how long can they stay in the fight? But, you know, this is their home territory, and they got the home field advantage on this one. And they are in the moral and ethical right place to defend their nation. But that's where this is headed for that. And I think Russia is hoping – what they're hoping for is that we just lose interest and we just stop talking about it. And that's the last thing we should be doing.
Or not. And it looks like Sweden and Finland are joining their biggest nightmare. And as General Keane told me this morning, there's about 40,000 more troops right on the border of Russia. So that's exactly what they didn't want, what they were complaining about. And get this, Germany will send 7 self-propelled howitzers to Ukraine and provide training on using them. They also have committed to spending $105 billion to modernize what is what they have of a fighting force and get over 2%. So this is, can you believe that Germany is prepared to defend itself?
Well, this is the concern that the West has. Look, I've said this and I really believe it, that President Zelensky awakened the West out of their post-Cold War slumber. You might argue the Cold War really never ended. Or maybe we got a quick break there when Boris Yeltsin was president of Russia. But certainly once Putin took over, that was, you know, he was going to be seeking, you know, to do things that were certainly not in the West's interest. And we saw that with his cyber attack on Estonia, invasion of Georgia, invasion of Ukraine, all the other things he's done. But yes, you know, Germany has now stepped up. They know that this is Vladimir Putin is an existential threat to Europe. They all recognize that. And from Putin's standpoint, he knows that it's bad for Russia not to be aligned with Europe, bad for them economically, but it's good for him and his regime to be aligned with China, which is the only place for them to go now. Because he knows that if liberty and freedom and democracy make their way to Russia, which are those are our ideals, those are European principles and values, then his regime is going to end. And that's going to be the tension in Russia. Whether they sign up for Vladimir, what's right for Vladimir Putin or what's right for Russia. There's always been this dichotomy in Russia. Are they an Asian nation, a European nation? Vladimir Putin is tilting, obviously, towards China. He wants the China model because that totalitarian regime suits his own personal needs. But it's not good for Russia.
Right. And now we know the EU is saying within 6 months, I want everybody off oil and gas bought from Russia. That is their war machine, how it's funded. Just to show you, not all Americans are on the same page. This guy, Joe Kent, he's a Republican, wants to be a congressman, aspiring congressman from Washington. Cut 21.
I don't think any American knows that we're at war right now because Congress has not done their job. They've blindly authorized billions of dollars to go to Ukraine to exacerbate this conflict. We're allowing our intelligence community without any kind of oversight to brag now out loud that we're killing Russian generals, sinking Russian ships. We're taking every single action to provoke the Russians, to give them no other option but to view us that we are at war.
Do you agree with that?
No, I know, Joe. We used to kind of work together in the old days. But, you know, respectfully, I would say I don't agree with them. Russia's at war with Ukraine, and we are assisting Ukraine in their efforts to repel an aggressor who is targeting, with impunity, Ukrainian civilians. And so we are 100% righteous in doing that. And I can tell you that there's plenty of intelligence oversight. The House and Senate intelligence committees have plenty of the oversight over the intelligence community, including the CIA. And Joe is rehashing something that the New York Times has reported on about Russian generals. But the administration has explained that. Admiral Kirby explained it yesterday, and I tried to as well just a few moments ago. So, you know, respectfully, I wouldn't agree with Joe. I think the bottom line with this is that, you know, if Russia were to take Ukraine, that would present massive economic cost for Europe as well as a strategic cost. Not in our interest to allow that to happen, aside from the moral and ethical reasons to stand up for democracy. And, you know, Ukrainians, NATO, we've said we defend every inch of NATO. Ukrainians are fighting for what NATO stands for right now against Russia. They've done more to defend, counter, and deter Russia than any NATO member, including the United States, has done. They're fighting and dying for it. And I can tell you from having lived in Russia for many years, you know, Vladimir Putin is the, you know, reincarnation of the evil empire. And we got to stand up to him.
Absolutely. He's worse than I thought. Maybe not you thought, but he's worse than I could have imagined. There is no civility to him. And he's so barbaric in the way he fights, and he's so corrupt. He put together a shell of an army. I mean, I'm not sure if he even knew somebody was grifting off the top of the money. He's put together tanks that don't work, armaments that don't report, and a fighting force that doesn't want to fight. And lastly, real quick, I did not know that Russian separatists were really Russian separatists. Evidently, they are complaining about the Russian army that they've done nothing they said they would to support them against the Ukrainians, and they're getting their butt kicked. Can you disseminate that for me?
So what I could tell you is that the Russian army, I mean, it's a bit of a Potemkin village here, and you know, the Russian so-called separatists are fighting, and they're upset that they're not getting the support that they feel like they deserve. But, you know, look, culture matters in the military. And the biggest sea change we saw in Ukraine was after Russia invaded Ukraine in 2014 and annexed Crimea illegally. Ukrainian military swiveled, and we really worked very closely with them and developed their military culture, and that's one reason why they've been so effective against Russia. The Russian military culture just has a lot of problems, and yes, they're so corrupt. They siphon off the money that's meant for training and equipment, and they buy palatial estates on the Black Sea. You know, talk about oversight. You know, Joe Kent can think about oversight. There isn't any of that in Russia, I can tell you.
Absolutely, I would say so, and there's no hell to pay. You speak up, you go to jail. Daniel Hoffman, thanks so much. Always educational. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
You got it. Inside Russia, 1-866-408-7669. And the good news is the polls show you are interested in what's going on over there, and you do realize it affects us here. Back in a moment.
Getting past all the rhetoric, it's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Jen. Sorry to see you go.
Are you?
Yes, and you've always been a good sport.
Thank you.
So
as have you.
On behalf of everybody, thank you.
Okay, so that's it. Jen Psaki goes to MSNBC, and the new woman is the first LGBTQ person to take this job, but she's actually has a partner who works at CNN, Suzanne Malveaux, a very well-known reporter there.
Yes. Like,
is that happen a lot? I mean, for me, I didn't even know that. Isn't that?
I didn't know that
I
either.
I thought that might be a disqualifier.
Well, I don't. I mean, who else? Right? What? Alan Greenspan, right? And
Andrew Mitchell.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean.
But she doesn't really do stories on the Fed every day. She's going to be dealing with the press.
I know. So, but I know. I agree. It definitely seems like a conflict, but I guess technically not. It's not until it is, right? I guess everyone's going to be scrutinizing it with intense detail. So.
Yeah, I mean, she probably has been President Biden's most effective cabinet member, right?
Psaki? I mean,
no question.
No, she's good. She's, I mean, annoying to a lot of our listeners, but she does a good job for him.
But she came off like a pro.
Yes.
I see a lot of amateurs around him or people with just terrible views of, from the Secretary of State who seems ambivalent about his job. I know he's a diplomat. To Jake Sullivan getting embarrassed in Saudi Arabia. To Ron Klain handling the left wing of his party terribly, giving them way too much sway within the administration. Where's the A-team? She was, to me, A-team level. And I think that he is really going to feel the impact of no longer having an A-plus person in communication. I don't care what you think or what their policies are. How do they handle being a spokesperson for those policies, handling things in real time, and not making more news than you need to at the end? That's the key. And I think I think she was very effective. So, Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'll have to just circle back with you.
Live from the Fox News radio studios in New York City, fresh off the set of Fox and Friends, it's America's receptive voice. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everybody. Brian Kilmeade coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, heard around the world, especially in the Ukraine. I'm so glad you're here. So glad you've been with us all week long. It's been one of those weeks that we're not going to forget between the historic would-be leak. I hope it's historic, rare, and never happens again, out of the Supreme Court. We were probably going to have this type of hysteria in late June when this decision was handed down. But I'm talking about Roe v. Wade. Of course, the argument happened in December. This brief was written in February, and it was leaked out in May. So we'll go into that, the ramifications and the protests that exist. Senator Rick Scott at the bottom of the hour, he came up this week because of a plan that he released that he would like to implement if the Republicans get the Senate. It's causing a lot of headaches. And Geraldo's standing by, so let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Critical race theory has become one of those hot button issues that the Republicans and other, you know, disinformers have seized on. It's, you know, weaponizing people's emotion.
It's unbelievable. Nina Jankowicz, disband the disinformation board and your bizarre czar. 20 states are demanding it. It's a partisan attack bureau, and Republicans are the target.
Number two.
U.S. intelligence shared with Ukraine helped lead to Ukraine's sinking of the Russian cruiser Moskva, one of the most embarrassing setbacks Russia has faced since the start of the war. The news coming on the heels of a New York Times report that says the U.S. has given Ukraine real-time battlefield intelligence that American officials said led to the killings of Russian generals.
What are you telling them? It looks like the U.S. is providing intel to take out Russian generals as well as take out battleships. I love it personally, but why are we talking about it? This is Vladimir Putin getting desperate to show some gains for his May 9th victory day.
Number one.
Do you think the progressive activists that are now planning protests outside some of the justices' houses are extreme?
Peaceful protest? No, peaceful protest is not extreme.
Right. Because they're not in front of your house. Supreme decision on Roe might be a month away, but protest and some violence is starting already as they fence in the Supreme Court and the homes of justices are published and targeted to, I assume, intimidate and make their lives miserable. With me right now is Geraldo Rivera, whose life is anything but miserable. He's in Ohio, comes to New York. I mean, you could say that you're at your zenith, I could say. You get to hang out with people like Judge Jeanine.
I do.
Jesse, when he's healthy.
When he's vertical, right?
Greg Gutfeld.
Him too.
That's good. And me. But, I mean, it's not John Lennon. I mean.
But, Brian, you are delightful. And you are one of the hardest working people since James Brown. Your energy is indefatigable. And it's not only that. It's how crisp and on target you are constantly, whether it's early morning or prime time.
You're reliable, Ryan.
And relatable. No, I mean it. I'm a big fan of yours.
Well, thank you very much. I hope you're going to be watching Saturday at 8, or is that date night for you? Or both nights date night for you?
It is Mother's Day Eve, so I don't know whether or not we'll be engaged. We have a big Mother's Day brunch planned at Shoreby, the local club in an old mansion on Lake Erie. It's gorgeous. We'll go there with Erica's mom and Jerry, her man, and Sol, of course, our daughter, and we'll celebrate Erica, a wonderful, wonderful mom who's now shepherding our new Labrador Retriever. 15 weeks old, destroying the house.
Wow.
Every couch has been chewed. The screen door has been shredded.
Are you even trying to train it?
Yeah, but it's a handful. And particularly with I'm bicoastal, I go from the shore of Lake Erie to the Hudson River. And with my travel, I'm doing the best I can. Walking him last night in the rain in Ohio was not fun, but we did it.
So what is your take on this Nina Jankowicz, who they say holds a nonpartisan role in the Homeland Security in terms of this new disinformation bureau that's been, I didn't know, up and running for the last 2 months? Geraldo, she's on the record calling Hunter Biden's laptop Russian disinformation, praising Christopher Steele. And I mean, it's like a Rachel Maddow monologue. I mean, what are they thinking?
I hadn't heard it described quite so vividly, Brian. But I think it's kind of preposterous. It's comical. I don't think it means anything in substantive terms. But what it does indicate is how absolutely tone deaf the Biden administration is about how people respond to some of these lurching, ill-considered actions that they take. As they, sputter and stumble and, try to clean up the president's malaprops, they overlook, like today's jobs report was fabulous. The unemployment report, fabulous. But people aren't going to be talking about the good news. They're going to be talking about inflation, and Biden is off message on that. He can't seem to come to grips with the fact that ordinary folks that I know and that you know, Brian, that are in our families are struggling to make ends meet. It's ridiculous how high the prices are. You can't pay $5 a gallon for gas. and have much left over if you're an average, hardworking, middle-class American. So I think that unless he can get that under control and show that he is in control, you know, these stories of the Nina Jankowicz's and the other, you know, fringy aspects of the Biden presidency really are irrelevant and kind of annoying, Ron.
428,000 jobs added, unemployment at 3.6. They've added something like 6.8 million jobs, and we're almost at pre-pandemic levels. But here's what the administration chose to do. I couldn't believe that. I don't think I've seen you comment on this, but here's what the administration chose to do, and this was not a mistake because it was not walked back, and it looked very intentional. Listen to what Joe Biden called MAGA.
What happens if you have a state changes the law saying that children who are LGBTQ can't be in classrooms with other children? Is that legit under the way that the decision is written? What are the next things that are going to be attacked? Because this MAGA crowd is really the most extreme political organization that's existed in American history.
More than the Ku Klux Klan, the skinheads that broke your nose? I mean, I could not believe he said that.
That was a classic Joe Biden misdirection. Instead of dealing with the fact that the high court, particularly with the efforts of Donald Trump to have the three new conservative members, has a conservative supermajority, it appears likely, very likely, that Roe v. Wade will be overturned within the month.
Right.
You know, the draft decision certainly indicates that. Rather, I think, than pointing out the real impact and the implications, some of which what he said is true. You know, it could have an impact on gay marriage if a state suddenly decides under the new precedent that the state has the ability under its police powers to abolish same-sex marriage, say, or, you know, or gay marriage. It is remotely possible, but the court certainly seems, and the court, remember, determines what is constitutional. You can't appeal from the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court says Roe v. Wade is overturned and where the Mississippi statute 15 weeks is the law, then that's going to be the law, and you can't appeal that. There's nowhere you know, in the judicial system or in the American political system where you can change what the Supreme Court says. I mean, you could hope that the next president, whoever it is, or this president, Biden, if there's another opening or
But Geraldo, I know you got the legal background, but do you agree that since this law passed, almost my entire life, it's been debated and no one's even talking about segregating classrooms between gay kids and straight kids? No one's talking about reversing same-sex marriage. Republicans don't even bring it up. Where they the pro-life movements as big as any, and pro-choice movements, respectively, are as big as any in the country. So
I live in MAGA country. I live in Ohio, a red
state. Are they extremists?
They are not extremists. I love them. We get along great. I get along great with all Ohioans.
Do you blame them if they're insulted? Do you blame them if they're insulted by the president's comments?
I absolutely understand the fact that they are that one side is alarmed that the law that the suppositions that they had that that abortion would be legal and hopefully rare and safe and so forth, they're worried that you're going to go back to the old days. I mean, there's a real worry among certainly the liberal, the pro-choice crowd, that the world that they knew is ending. You say that it's been your whole life. It has been your whole life.
The debate.
The debate.
But that's why these to bring up those extraneous other things and say that you're Republican, this extreme organization called MAGA. They're Republicans.
They're trying to get political hay by saying scary things that you're right, that probably will not happen. But you can't minimize the fact that this is an earthquake, that this is a gigantic change in American society.
So I would say
people have to come to grips with.
I'm just saying, like, I always look at people messaging. You know, so if Coca-Cola is rolling out a marketing plan, they're the best in the business, get hired. You know, the best advertising agency roll out for the biggest companies, McDonald's. Okay, what do you have? How are you going to sell it to me? And then I look at this administration, and this is where the best Democrats go, you would think. And their messaging on this day is to vilify the MAGA group and call them the most extreme organizations in modern American history. So what you did is go, what? What are you talking about? So Mr. and Mrs. Johnson in Ohio to the Andersons in Texas who vote for Trump or believe in strong borders and believe in not getting involved in foreign wars and everything. Now they're extremists. So you just did your own deplorable statement, but this one was intentional. Why would you go down the deplorable road?
The basket of deplorables that doomed Hillary Clinton's candidacy. Yeah. You're right, except for this, Brian. The fact of the matter is that Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned within the next month. The women in my state, in Ohio, which has a fetal heartbeat state, including my daughter, if God forbid she had an unintended, unwanted pregnancy, she'd have to drive to New York. And then if they pass a Texas-type law that says it's a crime to aid and abet an abortion, the driver, presumably me or a bus driver or a limo driver or her mother, could also be criminally charged. These are real, real changes in American society that, yes, the language is extreme. Yes, there is bungling and stumbling among Democrats. But the fact of the matter is that the law is changing.
But Geraldo, tell me if I'm understanding this. So I'm in California. I'm tired of paying taxes. I'm tired of the traffic. I'm going to be Elon Musk, and I'm going to move over to Texas. I am in New York. I have to wear my toddler has to wear a mask. I'm going to Florida. So I have all these moves that I'm making inside America. I need to be part of New York City. My dream is to live in New York. I'm moving to the best city in the world, New York City, crime or not. So people are making decisions every day. So if you say to yourself, you know, I'm in my 20s, I want to have freedom to be able to have an abortion if I want to, I will pick a state that has that. I will go to a state that does that. We make that decision every day by minor and major things in our lives. What would be the difference?
Well, as I said, what happens if they pass a Texas-type law that criminalizes that conduct? That says, okay, if you're going to drive yourself to New York if you want an abortion from Ohio, then I'm going to criminally charge you. It is possible. Brian, we are approaching a brave new world where women particularly, you saw the emotion from the so-called pussy hat demonstrations following the inauguration of President Trump. It's going to be very volatile. It's going to be very disruptive. The fact that these people are going to the homes of Supreme Court justices.
So wrong.
I think that it is so wrong. I hate it. And if someone came up to me in a restaurant and started yelling, oh, you're a Fox correspondent, you're
and they might.
Whatever. Yeah, but in my case, it would be more like the response to the person in the Dave Chappelle concert.
Right.
What they were talking about this. The 23-year-old, I forget his name.
Isaiah something.
I will not allow my personal space to be violated. I'm sure a lot of people feel the same as I do. But this is going to be very, very distasteful. It's going to be very tumultuous. It's not going to be easy. And the fact that they're raising the specter of all these horrible sidebars, I don't know how many of them are realistic. But I do think that American society, certainly between now and November, the midterm elections, is going to be, one big bumpy ride, Brian.
I hear you. Thanks for setting the table for me, Geraldo. Have a great Mother's Day weekend.
Okay, you too, Brian.
All right, go get him. 1-866-408-7669. I'm going to come back and take your calls. Bottom of the hour, Rick Scott. Brian Kilmeade Show, so glad you're here.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
That's false or misleading information that uses gendered tropes. So it might be, for instance, this is a big one that we tracked in the report, Kamala Harris slept her way to the top. Ilhan Omar is a favorite for this sort of racist sexual rhetoric that's compounded, the idea that she married her brother to immigrate to the United States, for instance. But then we see racialized narratives, things like Kamala ain't black, hashtag Kamala ain't black is one that we tracked, things that are saying that she's not black enough, she's not South Asian enough to claim that heritage. Rather than write the word bitch, they will use an exclamation point instead of an I.
So, you might not like any of the things she said or everything she said. The new disinformation czar will probably negate it. I don't even know if it's been investigated whether Ilhan Omar married her brother in order to get permission to come to this country. I don't even know. Has anyone made the time to find out? And if someone has an opinion in the black community that she's not black enough and they want to make that statement, whatever, not up to me. And I didn't think up to anybody to decide. But the new disinformation czar, Nina Jankowicz, you just heard her raving and ranting about that, will now decide. Really? Okay. So you hunt it down before you go. Go ahead. Find out if she is South Asian enough or the vice president. You might not like a description, but people don't like her job, what she's doing. Maybe they met her personally and think she is all those negative things that they just brought up. And they want to tweet about that. You're not allowed to have an opinion on social media now that might be contradictory to what? The Democratic Party? Anyone defending Mike Pence because maybe he's too cookie cutter? Anyone mock Mike Pence because he will not have lunch with a woman without his wife around? That's not nice. Let's get rid of that. That's what these people have set up with Homeland Security. Nina Jankowicz, the worst person outside a MSNBC pundit to be in charge of disinformation. Senator Rick Scott next. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What happens if you have a state changes the law saying that children who are LGBTQ can't be in classrooms with other children? Is that legit under the way that the decision is written? What are the next things that are going to be attacked? Because this MAGA crowd is really the most extreme political organization that's existed in American history.
So that was nuts as far as I was concerned and was one of the statements that was not stumbled upon by Joe Biden. It wasn't off a question that had to be walked back because he said it a couple of days ago and hasn't been walked back yet. The MAGA crowd, Make America Great Again crowd, the most extreme in modern U.S. history. Senator Rick Scott, Senator of Homeland Security. He's on Senate Homeland Security and Armed Services Committees. Chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee joins us now. Senator, what's your thought about the president labeling the MAGA crowd extreme?
Like, he's confused. I mean, he attacked me the other day, and he says, I want to raise taxes. When here's a guy that when he got elected to the Senate, think of what's happened. Taxes have skyrocketed in this country. I don't think there's a tax he hasn't increased. Number two is the debt's gone from less than a trillion to 30 trillion. He's taken to 45. And he's confused and says, I'm reducing the deficit. No, he said, Joe Biden is reducing the deficit. No, he's not. He's raising taxes. He's increasing the deficit. He's confused about everything. The decision, which has not come out, has nothing to do with anything other than abortion. I mean, he's just completely confused. His press conferences are incoherent.
But, I'll tell you what, Rick, that wasn't, Senator, that was intentional. No doubt about it. It's almost as if it was poll tested. I almost thought it was so off the charts, inappropriate. But I know when he stumbles, that was intentional. He wants to marginalize people that voted for Trump, I guess. And you're talking about 70 million more people voted for President Trump in losing than any other Republican in history. So I just want you to comment on that. Having said that, he didn't make a mistake in that. What do you think about the fact that he has no problem labeling you like that?
Well, I mean, I think he's struggling, right? I mean, the economy's, you know, not doing well. The border's completely open. The Ukraine, he's not been in the lead on what the Ukraine is. Gas prices are up. He's struggling. He's trying to get a create a fight here over something. And, you know, remember back when Clinton, you know, said all the bad things about people that were voting for Trump? I mean, the people who vote for Trump, the people who vote for Republicans, what do they want? Well, they want a good economy. They want their kids to learn something like math in school, not some gender identity stuff. They want to live in safe communities. I mean, the Democrats have just gone off a deep end. And I don't know why they're like this, and it's not going to be good for them in November. Hopefully, when we win in November, we get back to work and try to move this country in the right direction.
So I want everybody to hear what President Biden said about you and your proposal. You want everyone to pay into our country. And I don't care if it's $3, but 50% of the country should not be paying zero taxes. So listen to this.
Senator Rick Scott of Florida, United States Senator, who's leading the Republican National Senatorial Campaign Committee, released what he calls the ultra-MAGA agenda. It's a MAGA agenda, all right. Let me tell you about this ultra-MAGA agenda. It's extreme, as most MAGA things are. It will actually raise taxes on 75 million American families, over 95% of whom make less than $100,000 a year. Among the hardest hit, working families.
What's your reaction to that?
Well, he's confused. Okay, my plan is called, you know, Rescue America. You go to rescueamerica.com. That's what it's called. But here's my point, all right? We have the lowest labor participation rate, I think, since I've been alive. We've got to get people back to work. When I ran for governor in 2010, I had a plan to get people back to work. We had 1.7 million jobs. We got to get people back to work. What the Democrats are doing is with all these massive government programs, they're saying, oh, yeah, you don't have to work. You don't have to participate in our economy. That's not right. We've got to get people back to work. I grew up in a poor family. My mom didn't want to go on welfare. We lived in public housing. But she says, Rick, you got to get to work. My mom sometimes had three jobs. She wanted to be part of this country, building this economy. She did not want to be on food stamps or a health care program or anything. Not that the safety nets are bad, but they're not safety nets to be on the rest of your life. They're safety nets when you need them. Able-bodied Americans should be working, and they should be participate in our economy. That's my point, and that's what we have to be doing. We've got to get people back to work. Look, we're running unbelievable deficits. I mean, this president
is causing— says he's cutting the deficit. He has cut the deficit from the pandemic spending, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, when we had the pandemic spending, yeah, sure, it's down. But look at what he's taking. He's taken the debt from $30 trillion to $45 trillion in 10 years. You know, these presidents put out these 10-year plans. He never even tries to say he's going to balance the budget. We're going to be a trillion to a $2 trillion deficit this year. I mean, this is unbelievable spending. And by the way, you know, all these Democrat senators, they start complaining about inflation. Then they go push more and more spending. I mean, there's a new bill, a China bill, that we're just going to give $52 billion to our semiconductor industry, and they don't have to do anything. I'm for more semiconductors made in America, but tell me you're going to build a plant or something. I mean, they just want to spend the money and with no accountability. Like there's no imp, there's nothing out of it that happens when we waste all this money. It's causing inflation. It's causing shortages. Poor families can't afford to live here. You can't, if you're a young family, you can't buy a house in this
country.
Yeah,
they're evidently we're running out of baby formula as a nation.
Oh, it's, gosh.
Right. So the other thing is
you're dead all over the country.
A couple of things. So when you look at right now, I know Mitch McConnell did not want you to release that plan. And even if I agree 100% with it, have you become a target-rich environment now for Democrats who are desperately trying not to talk about their own track record?
Well, I think what every candidate has to do is come up with what they're running on. I think when you run, you can't just say the Democrats are all bad, you know, which what they're doing is really bad for us. You got to say, what are you going to do to fix it? That's what people expect. I'm a business guy. I believe in working off a plan. And that's what our voters want. They say, that's great. We know the Democrats are doing the wrong thing, but how are you going to make it better? So what I did, I put out my Rescue America plan. You can go to rescueamerica.com. And I tell people, here's my ideas. What are yours? And let's come up with something so when we win, which I believe we will, we're actually going to do something to govern and change the direction of this country. And I think that's exactly what our voters want.
So I don't know where you stand right now. A couple of things are happening. You saw that J.D. Vance won in Ohio, got the nomination, so he'll be taking on Tim Ryan. I know you wanted to stay out of the primaries. The president didn't. Do you feel as though the best candidate won there?
Oh, J.D. is going to do a great job. He'll be the next Republican senator from Ohio. I mean, he ran a great campaign. As you know, Trump endorsed him. But we've got great races, and we've got primaries in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Alabama, Missouri, Arizona. We've got great candidates running. We're racing our money. We're on the right side of the issues. The Biden agenda is devastating. His approval ratings are horrible. Nobody wants to campaign with him. They don't want to be seen with him. We're going to have primaries. We're going to have great people come out of the primaries. It's going to be people that state believe in. So J.D. Vance, he ran the best race in Ohio and he won. And that's who Ohio wants to represent them in the U.S. Senate, and he will.
So I just seeing this breaking news. Mike Pompeo is going to hold a press conference on the national security concerns he has around Dr. Oz, because Dr. Oz has obviously, he was born in Turkey and he voted in Turkey. He might have voted in Turkey a few years ago. What do you know about that? Do you share those concerns as Dr. Oz tries to be the next senator from Pennsylvania, and he's being very tight race with Dave McCormick?
Well, it's a tight race. I have not talked to Mike Pompeo about what he's what his concerns are. Look, I think we've got five great people in that race, one of them is going to come out and be the next Republican senator from Pennsylvania to replace Pat Toomey, who's not running for re-election. But I've not seen what Mike Pompeo is saying.
How do you feel about Governor DeSantis taking away the autonomy status from Disney in this battle for the parental right law that he passed?
Well, the law makes sense. We shouldn't be teaching kindergartners about sex. And if, it's a parent's choice to talk about their children about sex at that age. So I don't understand why Disney wanted to participate in the conversation and attack the bill. And, we have, Disney had a special tax status. I think we always have to look at those special tax status and see why they have them. I just don't get why Disney and these companies like Coke and Delta attacked the new election law, which is a good election law in Georgia. And then these companies, they sit there and want to attack us in this country, but they want to be okay with all the bad things that are happening in China. And they're not talking about the election laws in China. They're not talking about the election rules in China or the education rules in China. And they're just out there to make money. So these companies like Disney and Coke and Delta, they're hypocrites. I don't get why they want to do this.
So with Disney, they say, well, I got a $1 billion bond since I'm no longer autonomous. Let the taxpayers pay that off. Are the taxpayers on the hook for $1 billion?
Boy, I hope not. They better, it's not fair if any taxpayer is on the hook for the debt of the special taxing district. That is absolutely something I would have a big, big, big concern about. That's not what should be happening here.
Why do you think I know it's speculation, but here we are with Roe v. Wade, maybe a month away from being overturned. And for the most part, outside the actors' unions, the actors' unions? Yeah, I think the actors' union saying that I don't believe that any state that doesn't allow abortion, we should just ban them from ever shooting a film there. I don't really – Amazon saying we'll transport any of our employees to a state that allows abortion – I don't see many corporations speaking out like they did with the Georgia law, like they did with the North Carolina bathroom rule, like they did with the mislabeling the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida. Why do you think to this point corporations have been quiet?
Well, first off, I think most people believe that there's a baby there. There's a human life there. And they know the Democrats are radical. I mean, the Democrats have voted, and they're going to vote again next week to say that you can do abortion right up until the moment of birth, and you don't have to keep the baby alive. And they want taxpayers to pay for abortions in the United States and overseas. That's not where the public is. The public thinks that's radical. So I'm pro-life. I believe in the sanctity of life. And look, what the many doesn't do. When do the Democrats believe life begins? Then, I mean, when do you think it's okay to terminate somebody's life? And I mean, this baby, there's a baby there. The baby can, at 15 weeks, the baby can suck its thumb, feel pain, react to the sound. I mean, this is a little baby there, a little boy or a little girl. So the Democrats are radical, and I think most people understand the Democrats are radical. And I guess they'd have to play to the radical base to get their base out.
Lastly, this just coming in, and we're looking for confirmation, but another Russian warship has been hit. It looks like it was going right by Snake Island. It's the Admiral Makarov. It said it had been sailing at the time close to that island. It is damaged but still floating. What's your reaction if this is indeed true? It looks like an anti-ship missile, a Neptune rocket hit it.
I hope so. I hope every Russian ship sinks. I hope every Russian soldier hurries back to Russia. I hope Putin and all the thugs around him, anybody that's prosecuted this war, goes to prison for war crimes for the rest of their lives.
And you think that it's in America's interest for the Ukrainians to prevail there?
Oh, if you don't want American men and women to go fight a war, then you better do everything you can to help Ukraine be able to defend their soil and their freedoms. Thank God they're willing to do it, because if they don't, Poland's next or Lithuania next, they're NATO members. We are obligated by treaty to go defend their soil. So if you don't want American men and women to go fight, if you believe in freedom, you better do everything you can to help Ukraine. We ought to get them every bit of lethal weapons we can. We've got to understand exactly that we've got to get humanitarian support to Poland. I mean, you have to really appreciate the Polish citizens. There's not one Ukrainian that I know of in a refugee camp in Poland. They're all in somebody's house. They've opened their doors to these women and children, and they've said, you can get on our safety nets until you get back to work. It's unbelievable what the Polish citizens have done.
I agree with you in every sense. Senator Rick Scott, thanks so much.
All right. Take care, Brian.
You got it. And have a great weekend. 1-866-408-7669. Back with your calls in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Can you tell the American people that we're not headed for a recession?
I can tell the American people that we are much better positioned when it comes to that recession question than pretty much any other advanced economy I've seen. But probably more importantly,
you
can never rule anything out. So that's not really a relevant question. Let me make the point. The key point here is less about forecasting and probabilities. That's a very uncertain game right now. It is, what are we actually doing concretely to meet the challenges that we know American households face?
What are you doing? We have the Fed raising rates, and the experts say not fast enough. Now, I'm not looking forward to high interest rates, but they say between that, cutting back taxes, releasing regulations, and an oil and gas industry, these are things you could be doing. But right now, that's Jared Bernstein on CNN. He is a economic aide to President Biden, talking about kind of cheerleading the economy. That had some good news today. 428,000 jobs added. Unemployment ticked up. I'm not really sure how that calculus is, but at 3.6%, still extraordinarily low. But the problem is inflation's at 8.5, and salaries are increasing at the average of 5.8. Here's Larry Kudlow, Cut 36.
The Federal Reserve blew this a year ago. I don't know why Jay Powell is being reappointed. He certainly doesn't deserve it. He has people do not have confidence. He was out there yesterday, Laura, and he tried to whitewash the whole problem. He sounded like Joe Biden blaming inflation on Vladimir Putin and COVID. That's nonsense. The problem here was too much federal spending, too much federal borrowing, and too much central bank money printing. And the Fed has got to stop whitewashing the problem and go to it. Otherwise, the longer they wait and the more they try to avoid these issues, which is what Biden is unfortunately doing, the worse the recession is going to be. I mean, the worst possible combination is inflationary recession.
That's Larry Kudlow a little bit later, and he'll be on, you know, all throughout the channel. He's got his own show on one of our local affiliates, 77 WABC. And look, a lot of this stuff has nothing to do with President Biden or President Trump or anybody. I mean, you have supply chain issues. We've never been through a pandemic, 100-plus years. Now these idiots in China lock down an entire city of Shanghai and lock out the ports. They're starting to lock down in Beijing. They're just releasing some ports and people over in Hong Kong. So this thing is rippling through, causing all types of effects, and manufacturing coming out of China at the way it is, and there's been no move to bring it back outside Intel opening up a couple of plants. That's the issue. Now you can't get chips for cars. That's not necessarily our fault. But if GM and Ford and other major car companies, Chrysler owned by Fiat now, at one point when they're sitting around the table meeting with their board of directors, do they ever say, what if? What if there's a problem with China? What if we have a war with China? Who's going to make our stuff and our cars and our chips? Anybody? So that's part of it. And I don't blame President Biden on that, but I haven't seen any move to change that. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget to watch One Nation on Saturday night at 8 o'clock and keep it here.
From the Fox News radio studios in New York City, fresh off the set of Fox and Friends, it's America's receptive voice, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We are moving ahead with two great guests. Lucas Tomlinson, right at the top of the hour, this news about another Russian warship being hit and exploded, possibly off a Neptune a missile. That'd be a pretty amazing. Loving that. And Walter Russell Mead, a distinguished fellow at the Hudson Institute and professor of foreign affairs and the humanities at Bard College and a Wall Street Journal columnist. We talk about where we're at right now in the world with another missile crisis, another standoff with Russia that's might be heading towards something like the Cuban Missile Crisis. We'll get his perspective on that, but let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three. Sponsored by LifeVac. Save a life in a choking emergency. Visit LifeVac.net to learn more and use code BK10 to save 10%.
Number three.
Critical race theory has become one of those hot button issues that the Republicans and other, you know, disinformers have seized on. It's, you know, weaponizing people's emotion.
Isn't that nice? Nina Jankowicz, disband the disinformation board and your bizarre czar. 20 states are demanding it. It's a partisan attack bureau and Republicans are the target.
Number two.
U.S. intelligence shared with Ukraine helped lead to Ukraine's sinking of the Russian cruiser Moskva, one of the most embarrassing setbacks Russia has faced since the start of the war. The news coming on the heels of a New York Times report that says the U.S. has given Ukraine real-time battlefield intelligence that American officials said led to the killings of Russian generals.
But why are you telling them? It looks like the U.S. provided intel to take out Russia's number one warship and played a role in killing about a dozen Russian generals. Personally, I love it. But why are we talking about it? This is Vladimir Putin's desperate push to show some gains for his May 9th victory parade.
Number one.
Do you think the progressive activists that are now planning protests outside some of the justices' houses are extreme?
Peaceful protest? No, peaceful protest is not extreme.
Really? At somebody's house? A justice's house? Supreme decision was Roe. Supreme decision on Roe might be a month away, but the protest and some violence starting already as they fence in the court and homes of the justices could be next. They're targeting. They're trying to intimidate. I don't think it works, nor do I think it's acceptable. It's an obvious move to go secure their homes and tell everybody it's wrong to do. Lucas Tomlinson joins us now. Hey, Lucas, welcome back.
Brian, it's great to join you. Greetings from London.
You're in London now, where Boris Johnson said something interesting a couple of days ago. He said, we were wrong not to fully arm Ukraine for this fight ahead of time, but let's not make that mistake again. I was shocked to hear that.
That's right. And the British Foreign Secretary Liz Truss said the same thing, saying that Putin could have been deterred from invading Ukraine. And this came up yesterday, Brian, when Japan's prime minister visited 10 Downing Street and said that Ukraine could be East Asia tomorrow, meaning a potential Chinese invasion of Taiwan. And what officials are saying is they don't want to wait to put sanctions on China because people saw how effective those were from deterring Vladimir Putin from invading Ukraine. They want to help arm Taiwan. But certainly Ukraine on the mind here, even with the visit of the Japanese prime minister.
And you report that China buzzed Taiwan with the largest contingent of fighter jets and bombers in more than 3 months, one day after the Japanese prime minister visited 10 Downing Street, right?
That's right. And ahead of President Biden's trip to East Asia, he'll be going to Japan and South Korea. Of course, the new conservative president of South Korea takes the helm the next few days.
Interesting. So what about this report about the a Russian warship going by Snake Island again was just blown up? It's still above water, but it's not sinking yet, but it was hit. Have you heard this? The Admiral Makarov.
Well, Ryan, I saw the reports. I'm here in London, so wasn't able to talk to some of the officials that I normally would talk to if I was back in Washington. But what, you know, officials and analysts have said, you know, these warships, they're not stealth. I mean, it's a big hunk of metal in the middle of the water. And certainly U.S. military and the intelligence community has satellites in space. They have drones. And certainly Ukraine knows where they are. And so what's most surprising and shocking is that the Russians would even put warships within range of those Neptune missiles.
I mean, it just seems like you're the one with the military background. You're the one working the Pentagon. It seems to me the Russians are totally inept.
It certainly seems that way. I mean, you'd think after you lost your flagship, a flagship cruiser, a size of which had not been sunk since the Falklands War 40 years ago, that you would pull all those Russian warships back. In fact, that's what the reporting was at the time, that after the flagship was sunk, the Russians had moved all their warships back. And the fact that you have another warship now coming close to shore within missile range, I don't think you need to be in the military or know that that's not a very smart idea.
All right. So, Lucas, what can you also tell me about these reports now that we played a prominent role in taking out those dozen generals, maybe more, on the battlefield, and also played a role in taking out the Moskva warship?
So, Brian, some of the officials I spoke to have some of the same issues you had in your intro. Where, why are people talking about this? I mean, of course, there's been a lot of intelligence sharing. The Pentagon has not been shy about that. Perhaps some officials think that instead of being browbeaten about why aren't you getting more weapons into Ukraine, they wanted to, you know, show a little leg, show what the intelligence community is doing. However, former Marine I spoke to, we were talking about, listen, you know, Brian, covering, terrorism for the last 20 years, going after targets using mobile phones, this is something that the U.S. military and intelligence community has been doing for many years. And you might be asking, well, Lucas, are, you know, generals walking around on, you know, mobile phones? Not necessarily. I mean, think about this almost like carrier pigeons. If you saw a big, you know, cell network in the middle of nowhere, you know, it's not a big city. It's not New York. It's not Washington, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. You would assume there's some kind of command and control element. That's where you'd have a communications hub. And if it's in the middle of the woods and you know the Russians are there, it doesn't necessarily take Inspector Clouseau or, Jean-Luc Ferrer to know that that's probably where the Russian generals are. You might want to hit that target.
And just for the quote, so it's this is from the story. National Security Council spokesperson Adrian Watson said in a statement, quote, "We do not provide intelligence with the intent to kill Russian generals." So they don't want to make this seem a U.S.-Russian fight. That would change everything. It might help unite the Russian public, although it's pretty clear that we're doing a lot of the arming and we're picking up the pace. So it does seem like we're getting more aggressive. Why do you think that is?
Well, the Biden administration wants Russia to lose. There have not been as explicit as, let's say, Boris Johnson, that speech you referenced a few days ago, where he was actually the first world leader to speak to the Ukrainian parliament just this week. He said very succinctly, Ukraine will win. You know, different. We've heard kind of a mixed, you know, it hasn't been as strong as direct from, U.S. leaders of late. But there's no question the Biden administration wants Russia to be unsuccessful in this invasion and war in Ukraine. And so as these weapons are flooding in, you saw the supplemental, a lot more, billions more of dollars that the Biden administration wants Congress to fund. This is a war that's going to drag on for months, if not years. And so the weapons are flowing in. And certainly they do want to see the Russians lose. However, you might say the language might not be as direct or colorful as they use here in London.
So Mariupol is right now under siege like never before. It's been under siege really for the last 68, 71 days. So we understand that they found a backdoor into these steel mines that could spell the end for the Ukrainian Marines that are holed up there. But a victory for Russia in the Mariupol would mean more than just taking the city, it's speculated. It would mean that they could actually announce that at the victory parade on the 9th and be able to free up some troops to go hit more targets in the east. What do you think about that?
Well, I'll say the fight for Mariupol is taking a lot longer than the Russians wanted. You know, they wanted to move some of these battalions farther north into the Donbass That's where they've massed over 20 of these battalion tactical groups. There's no question President Putin wants to make a big statement on May 9th. That's when the Russians celebrate the victory over Nazi Germany in World War II. By the way, Brian, it's just another thing that the Russians do. You know, the rest of the Western world, of course, celebrates victory in Europe on May 8th. Of course, the Russians have to have their own date, May 9th. Just shows some of the schism there. But there's no question Putin wants to make a big statement. You know, in years past, he's hosted world leaders. One year, the Israeli prime minister went out there for May 9th celebrations. Of course, that will not be happening this year. Western leaders are, in fact, sanctioning. And just this week, we heard from the European Union, they want to, you know, ban Russian oil. But there's some, you know, economists in the West that say the one issue is if you, you know, ban and cut Russian oil too quickly, you know, simple supply and demand tells you that as that demand drops, the price spikes, and that Putin could actually benefit from that, because you've seen what the price of oil has been since the invasion, and there's no question, you know, billions are still flowing into his coffers.
But would you also say that the European Union making the announcement within 6 months getting off oil and gas, Russian oil and gas, is something that's pleasurable and a welcome statement from the U.S. perspective?
No question. Oh, there's no question. I mean, you cannot keep funding Putin with billions of dollars in oil revenue. There's other places. There's other sources of oil. I don't have to tell your audience right there in the United States. There's plenty of oil that Europe could, and gas that the Europeans could turn to. It does not have to be from Russia. There's no question. Just the only issue, of course, is potential short-term turmoil with the markets. And if there are these huge price spikes, and we've already seen the price of oil go up tremendously, that certainly is a benefit to an oil producer like Russia, because next to the Saudis and the United States, nobody produces more oil than Russia. And oil is actually about half of Russia's budget. It's not gas, it's oil.
Lucas, what are you doing in London?
I was here for training, and I was also here at the in our London bureau. So I was covering down here for the week. So now I'm heading home.
You're heading home. So you're going to be heading back. So my, some former Secretary of Defense Esper has got a book out. He's starting to do the tour. He's going to be on 60 Minutes. He's just talking about what he saw with the Trump White House. Here is Mark Esper talk about sending troops to the border. Cut 33.
And I told this story to General Milley and my chief of staff. I said, let's be safe. Let's just check and make sure that this isn't being worked somewhere in the building. And Milley comes back days later, and the door opens up, and he's waving a document in his hands, and he says something like, Secretary, you're not going to believe this. And that's when he explains to me that, yes, they were working, that we had developed a plan, initial concept of how this might happen, and I was just flabbergasted that not only was the idea proposed, but that people in my department were working on it.
So he's talking about putting 250,000 troops at the border. The president was fed up, President Trump at the time. Does this sound plausible, feasible? Did you know about this?
Well, as I checked, the president is the commander-in-chief and then controls the U.S. military. So if the president wants some options, officials will say it's the Pentagon's duty to present options. We did hear these reports, and of course, National Guard troops were dispatched to the border. We've certainly heard from Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who has welcomed that to firm up the border. But in terms of Esper, well, I think a lot of people are going to look forward to him being on the special report with Brett Baer.
What was he like to deal with?
Esper?
Yeah.
He was he's a former Army officer. He's a pretty straight arrow. I'll just say that. Pretty straight arrow. He's not like General Milley. He's not as vocal, doesn't beat his chest as much. Pretty straight arrow.
All right. Lucas, have a safe travel back.
Thank you very much, Brian. Appreciate having
you. You got it. Thank you. 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's not safe to live in Los Angeles, and it's dangerous for a comedian to perform. Let's not forget the Will Smith situation. No criminal action taken against Will Smith. We have a district attorney who is not a district attorney. He's a public defender for criminals. How in the world can he dismiss this case? Let the felony charges fly all the way to court. Let the judge determine if there's enough evidence. There's what you saw on that video. You see an attempt to inflict bodily injury to an individual. These are felony charges. But we have a district attorney who is immune from any type of prosecution himself.
So here's the thing. Well, Leo Terrell is referring to the fact that they only kept him overnight. He could probably get out now, $30,000 bail. And this guy, a 23-year-old that attacked Dave Chappelle, had a gun, follow me, replica gun or an antique or a replica gun with a knife inside. But it was in his backpack. So when he attacked and tackled Dave Chappelle on the stage at the Hollywood Bowl in front of tens of thousands, they said the weapon wasn't in use, so therefore his life wasn't in danger. So what a bad message. What about the next hit? I know you could use jailing somebody for a deterrent. Isn't that not only deterring the next act, but others from doing that act? So right now, if Dave Chappelle is susceptible, then every comedian is susceptible. If you're Kevin Hart, you're Jerry Seinfeld. Howie Mandel came out yesterday, and I was watching this with Billy Bush. I guess he's on, was he on Access Hollywood? I forgot which one he is, but he does the best job out of everybody. And he just interviewed Howie Mandel. He says, I have depression. You know, I'm a bit neurotic. He said, I cannot get this out of my mind. He said he's been performing for close to 40 years. He loves doing it, but he does not want to do stand-up right now. And the other thing is, when you're doing stand-up, evidently, Adam Carolla was saying that people are yelling out more than ever. So if you're Adam Carolla, you're this rare thing of a conservative comedian. So you go up in major cities because he gets big venues, major cities, usually Democrat. And you go up and you say Trump did this and Trump did that, or conservative does this and how bad Joe Biden is. People are going to start yelling out. And you don't worry about it personally, but it ruins the crowd. The crowd gets tense and they don't laugh. So if you get a good lineup out that guy, it might be on his expense, or usually his, but usually his or her expense. But then you lost the whole momentum of the comedy show, which is supposed to be an escape. I'm surprised how laid back people are, the Hollywood community is. I am really surprised by that, because to me, I thought this was a much bigger deal. I mean, Jamie Foxx was the first one out to help save Dave Chappelle from this lunatic that wrote a song for him, aspiring rapper, but a loser living in his brother's house, fighting with everybody, volatile, with some link to the trans community. They're still evaluating that. To me, I have no patience for it. I would not be making excuses for the behavior. Real quick, before we go, the big story of the week is Roe v. Wade may be being overturned in a few weeks, and we're trying to find the leaker out. This is what Hillary Clinton said. Never shy about using hyperbole. Cut three.
This opinion is dark, it is incredibly dangerous, and it is not just about a woman's right to choose. It is about much more than that. And I hope people now are fully aware of what we're up against, because the only answer is at the ballot box to elect people who will stand up for every American's rights. And any American who says, look, I'm not a woman, this doesn't affect me, I'm not black, that doesn't affect me, I'm not gay, that doesn't affect me. Once you allow this kind of extreme power to take hold, you have no idea who they will come for next.
Judge Alito is not acting emotional. He's not going for anything. He's not in contact with any administration. He's a conservative who didn't think constitutionally Roe v. Wade made sense. There's nothing about abortion in the Constitution. Therefore, he thinks it should be a state rule. Let the states decide. Not banning abortion, although some would love to see that. Walter Russell Mead is next. We put this whole standoff with Russia in perspective. Don't move.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
One Sarmat missile, and that's it. The British Isles are no more.
But we are serious people.
And I am saying that seriously. They're accusing us of state terrorism. The UK also has nuclear weapons.
No one will survive in this war.
And that was from Russian TV. obviously through a translation. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Walter Russell Mead joins us now, distinguished fellow with the Hudson Institute, professor of foreign affairs and humanities at Bard, and Wall Street Journal columnist. Walter, welcome.
Good to be here, Brian.
Walter, I guess we're trying to pursue this story about another Russian warship that might have been hit and on the way to sinking right outside Snake Island. If that is indeed the case from a Neptune missile, what's the significance?
Well, it would be another significant military setback for the Russians in a war that has been one disappointment and disaster for them after the next.
What's the biggest surprise for them?
The biggest surprise is that they have, I guess, two. One, they have not been able to beat the Ukrainians on the ground. They thought they would just roll them. And the other is that the Western response has just been much tougher than they expected.
Right. And now they might even be adding two new countries to NATO, and more forces are on NATO's border, NATO country borders. That's the nightmare scenario for Russia, and it's already happening.
That's exactly right. They've brought on something worse than anything they could imagine.
So you write, too, the Biden administration is really on the line here. It would be a significant loss if they let Russia prevail in this or get significant land in the end. That the Biden administration is saying, well, watching Ukraine in a war they never thought would happen. How did we miss it so bad? We watched 130,000 troops well up at the border. Did we really not think it would happen?
Well, I think, they thought by 2 weeks before the war, the Biden administration understood just where Russia was, and we had great intelligence about that. But we really didn't think first that they would do it for months. And then we thought the administration's calculation was that within 72 hours of the attack, the Ukrainian forces would disintegrate. They really believed in a quick Russian win.
And is that why we did offer Zelensky a way out?
That's right. And why we moved our embassy out of Kiev really quickly in a way that, in retrospect, does not look good.
You talk about before the war, the perception in the West at the governmental level was Ukraine is a strategic and economic backwater. It was weak and corrupt, whose politics reflected shadowy struggles among oligarchs. Today, we think of Ukraine as a strong democratic state whose security is critical to European stability. What is the reality? Forget perception. They have shown great strength. They've had shown unbelievable resolve. They do have this incredible leader.
They've really transformed themselves. There is a question, if it's a long war, how well they can hold up. Because a long, grinding war like World War I or the U.S. Civil War would test any country to the breaking point. So how well Ukraine can hold up in that circumstance, we don't know.
Right. So the stakes, I believe, are enormous. We're sending in $33 billion more. Germany's now sending in howitzers and is now committed to the 2% minimum that the NATO requires to stay in the alliance. But they've always just said, now we're just going to be an economic power. That's all changed. So right now we continue to flood weapons in. How does that figure into what Vladimir Putin will talk about May 9th on Victory Day?
You know, this is anybody's guess what he's going to do on Victory Day, but it does look like Vladimir Putin is beginning to look like a cornered rat. That is to say, he is faced with a humiliating defeat in a part of the world that for him and the Russians who back him is absolutely critical to Russia's standing as a great power. And so the question is, what will the cornered rat do to survive in that situation? And that's really quite worrying, because this is a cornered rat who has nuclear weapons.
We're talking to a very significant guest, Walter Russell Mead, to try to put in perspective what this is. I'm heartened by the fact, Walter, that the American people, by almost all the polls, see how significant Ukraine is. They're not saying it's 6,000 miles away. What do I care? We know we have issues here. We might be heading to a recession. Why do you think the American people seem to understand this conflict and the need for it so much, when in the past they've lost interest or didn't see the reason why?
Well, I think Putin has been very helpful in that he broke the basic law of international relations. You don't change boundaries by force. He's behaved in a monstrous way in Ukraine, and his forces have been beyond the pale. At the same time, many Americans remember the Cold War. They remember what it's like to have a nuclear superpower in Russia controlled under a relentlessly hostile dictator. They can see all that, and they know that we're better off dealing with this in Ukraine than we would be dealing with an energized, supercharged Russia that has reconquered Ukraine.
I want you to hear what Jack Keane told me this morning about his assessment of where we're at and how the oil embargo that the EU could be putting in place would affect this whole conflict. Cut 19.
This is absolutely one of the miscalculations that Putin made. He certainly underestimated the unity that the West would have as a result of his invasion into Ukraine. And you see it on the sanctions and how tougher they're getting, and now actually dealing with something that's going to hurt the Europeans, and that is an embargo on oil and eventually something to the same effect on gas. That could not have even been conceived of a couple of months ago, the Europeans moving in that direction.
Do you believe they will? We know that everyone's cutting back significantly. We have said zero. We're going to zero Russian oil and gas. Do you believe that the European Union will do what they say outside Hungary?
Well, you know, they have to decide by unanimous vote, and Hungary has said it's against it. Now, they're looking for ways to persuade the Hungarians to go along, so we'll see. We should realize, too, that there's two separate issues here, oil and gas. And oil is, in some ways, the easier one for the Germans to embargo. Gas would be tough, but they're working on it. Europe has really behaved in this crisis far better than it has done in anything really since the end of the Cold War.
You know, I'm thinking long term, Walter. This might be this huge conflict might enable us to truly pivot to China. Because the Europeans will finally understand they have to take responsibility with our leadership of their own security, and that the Russian threat is real. We could say it over and over again. All these presidents have had the same complaint. Now they get it. So if they provide their own security and their own, and they start funding their own defense, that may allow us to really square off with our number one economic and military foe. Don't you agree?
I think that's possible. I also think that the Europeans and the Americans continue to wake up to China, that China has been a big supporter of Russia in this war. China has not criticized anything Putin has done in the war. And this is waking people up to just what we face.
Possibly. I think that's correct. Now, we hear that China had some overflights a couple of days ago. Over Taiwan. But if you're China, from the best you can understand, from the context you may have and what you know about them, are they less or more likely to pull off this invasion of Taiwan after watching what happened with Russia and Ukraine?
Well, I think they're clearly very seriously rethinking now just what the Western response to an invasion would be and how much it would cost them. And we're reading about surveys they're doing. They're trying to understand what the impact of sanctions like the ones put on Russia would have on China and how that would increase the economic cost. So they're definitely thinking. And, you know, at the same time, there's been a lot of stuff in the press lately that the U.S. Navy and our forces are really not prepared to help Taiwan in the way we've helped Ukraine. You know, we don't have the infrastructure in place to do that. So we've really, you know, we've got to move very, very quickly because the Chinese will also be looking at that gap.
Why do you think they view us as a threat when, you know, from our perspective, we do not look, you know, we're not looking to cause war with China. Now we're waking up to the threat that is China as they build their military and their economic power. Why don't you think they could say, let's compete? Why do you think they go out and say we have to conquer?
Well, some of it really does have to do with Taiwan, which for a lot of Chinese emotionally is part of China, a lot of Chinese on the mainland. And so that's an issue that the central government can always hit. We should also look, their economy is slowing down. The central government is facing a lot of protests over problems in the real estate sector. Their stock market is not doing great. Their COVID policy is unpopular. So, you know, having a foreign enemy can always be helpful when you've got a lot of domestic trouble.
So, you know, create that enemy, get the people galvanized, who the problem is. I guess that's it. Part of their slowdown, Walter, has to be the fact that they locked down 25 million people in Shanghai and millions more in Beijing and had Hong Kong locked down, too. A total overreaction for what we know about COVID-19. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I think they're, you know, this is a problem they've got, that Xi Jinping has staked his personal prestige on the zero COVID policy. And clearly in the past, that zero COVID policy reduced deaths in China. But with Omicron, which is, you know, much more contagious, the cost of that zero COVID policy are rising rapidly. And but the Chinese government, because it's committed itself to this, you know, and the all-powerful Communist Party of China has said this is the way, they're having a very hard time thinking through changes in policy.
And Walter, lastly, just to pivot back to Russia, you know, there's two stories out. One, that we played a role in providing the intelligence that ended up the deaths of 12 Russian generals, and we provided the intelligence to allow Ukraine to blow up the number one warship in the Russian Navy. And if that is now public, although I love that we're doing it, I see the objective of being right. How do you feel about this being public and pushing an unstable, seemingly unstable leader like Vladimir Putin with nuclear weapons to the brink? Do you see a danger in that?
Well, of course there's a danger. It's hard to tell, you know, what other messages are going through. I mean, hopefully the U.S. is explaining to Putin on a number of channels that for him to go nuclear, say to use a tactical nuclear weapon in Ukraine, would create even more blowback and even more of a crisis. But by pushing Putin into a corner and then advertising the degree to which the Americans are helping Ukraine, we're clearly turning this into a very, very high-stakes international crisis.
And it's.
I hope we win. I hope we're ready for it, and I hope we win.
But that last, your latter point is clumsy, don't you think?
Well, again, we'll have to see what, you know, is there a plan behind the plan? I don't know. But yes, it's high stakes. It's doubling down on something that could lead to the kind of confrontation we haven't seen since, say, the Cuba Missile Crisis of the early 1960s.
And going back to Secretary of Defense Austin, says one of the things we want to do is have a weakened Russia so we don't have to deal with this again in a few years.
Right.
I love that sentiment. That's the main reason why it matters. But saying it publicly, if it's a tactic, okay. But if it's just not well thought out,
yeah.
I have a problem with that. What do you think? Is it a tactic?
I agree with you completely there, Brian. You know, if they have a carefully calibrated plan and these public statements are part of a larger plan to take, you know, to really use this crisis to push Putin back, great. But if this is kind of, you know, casual, feeling the exuberance of the morning and a moment and letting off steam, they're actually making the situation much more dangerous.
It's always great to talk to you. Walter Russell Mead, thanks, and I look forward to your book, The Ark of a Covenant. It's available for pre-order right now, and it's going to be out July 5th. Thanks, Walter.
Great. Thank you, Brian.
You got it. Talk to you again soon. I'm going to back to wrap up this hour and give you the latest. We're still following that story about that Russian warship that might have been hit by Ukrainian surface-to-air missiles. That's going to be great. And we'll be also exploring mysterious fires that are popping up in Russia. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We also will try to squeeze in some calls. 1-866-408-7669.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Roe is over 2-1 in approval. And Alito and him said, we don't care. We're not fair, and we don't care. And all the Democrats are going to do is sit around and talk about veganism and pronouns. And to some extent, that is a justified opinion that they have.
That is James Carville talking about how poorly the Democrats are playing this. And the fact is, the Supreme Court should not be worrying about popularity. It should be talking about the Constitution. So his attack on the Supreme Court is not really an attack. Let's find out if there's even more to know.
More to know.
Lighter note, Tom Brady admits his tuck rule that might have been a fumble. Remember, his hand was going back. He was tackled. The ball came loose. They said it was no fumble because he was in motion. Let's listen to Tom Brady. This was the pivotal moment in his career because the Raiders were lost to the upstart New England Patriots who go to the Super Bowl, and Tom Brady starts his remarkable run. Had he been sacked, Drew Bledsoe might have got the job back, and we might not have even thought that Tom Brady would have amounted to anything.
Tuck rule game against the Raiders.
Might have been a fumble.
That is to Justin Bieber on his podcast, right? Brady's first postseason appearance. The tuck rule is now official. Brady posted a video on Twitter. To me, he's just having fun, right?
I agree. Like, the fact he's like joining Bieber on his podcast, he's enjoying life.
Next, Phil Mickelson's gambling losses in a brand new book are highlighted. This is unbelievable. They say one of the greatest lefties ever, if not one of the greatest golfers ever, federal auditors discovered his gambling losses total of $40 million between 2010 and 2014. Does he have anybody in his family just to rein him in?
Clearly not, but I mean, I'm not sure of his total net worth, but $40 million, he's still okay financially?
The golf store's annual income in 2012, it was estimated to be $48 million. He netted about $1 million in 1 week from Dean Foods' stock deal. The book also said Mickelson's split with longtime caddy Jim McKay was because he wasn't paying him. He was late on his payments. Next, the University of South Carolina blasted over a white student accountability meeting. They had this meeting they called, description was white student accountability. The purpose was engaging in this project to threefold. To number one, help social students recognize both their contribution and responsibility to dismantling racism. Number two, to encourage students to use their voice, power, and privilege to enact change in their classroom, community, and practice, and support students in developing skills to host similar groups among peers. So what role do you have as a white guy while you're paying all that money to go to the University of South Carolina?
Well, apparently the university gave a statement to Fox saying the accountability group was part of a student's project and was not part of an officially sponsored collegiate college of social work activity.
The TPUSA chapter president at the University of South Carolina says it's just very sad and disappointing that the university would organize an event that promotes legitimately racist ideas. Next. Oh, my goodness. That's it? Is that what this music means?
It means, you know, it is it.
That is all we need to know.
That's all we need to know, and it's time for you to promote what's going to be on One Nation.
Oh, on One Nation, we're going to have John Taffer. We're going to have Robert O'Brien. We're going to have the president of the Heritage Foundation and Chris Rufo to talk about where the corporations are. Why are they standing up and taking on Roe versus Wade? I'll tell you. 1 o'clock, 8 o'clock.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day. Featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.